tables, and we created a big circle. And Gaylen was in the middle. Everybody, she encouraged everybody to hold each other's hands, which is right spirit of what goes on in Cuba. And Gaylen prayed that we would be known as a church all about shalom. The cool thing about Sam's picture, she came up afterwards and shared this prophetic picture that God had given her the week prior about picturing that very thing. This circle, people holding hands, with the center being all about peace, under the banner of peace, under the banner of shalom. And this statement that she has written in the center is, will the circle be unbroken? Good question. You know, as I've been wrestling with this idea of shalom and what does it look like to live out shalom in this community, I've been struck with the fact that as we encourage each of you to live out shalom, we, the churches in Squamish, aren't living out shalom. There's actual disunity in the larger church in Squamish. People not really working together, not really respecting one another. As a result of this teaching series, God put it on my heart to actually, with seeds of peace in my pocket, to go initiate a conversation with one of the pastors here in Squamish and talk some of these things out. It was a powerful morning. I know some of you were praying for me, and I appreciate that. I was shaking in my boots as I was preparing to go. I didn't know what to expect. I felt like I had to armor up. I didn't know whether my word would be received. I didn't know. But I was going by faith, stepping into what I believe God had called me to do. So my quiet time that morning, I was thirsty, I was dependent. Oh God, give me a word. I need to know you're with me. And so I cracked open my devotional. And this is what I read. At the age of, and it was, by the way, it was St. Patty's Day that I went to talk to this fellow. This is what I read. At the age of 16, Patrick was kidnapped from his home by Irish marauders and taken to Ireland, where he was sold as a slave and forced to herd livestock. After 6 years of slavery, Patrick escaped to his native Britain. But rather than becoming bitter, Patrick believed his captivity and deliverance was ordained by God and devoted his life to full-time ministry. While studying for the priesthood, he experienced recurring dreams, which he heard voices say, "O holy youth, come back to Erin and walk once more amongst us." He convinced his superiors to let him return to Ireland in 432, not to seek revenge, but to seek reconciliation. I was like, oh, yeah. God, that's my heart. That's what I want to do. I want to seek reconciliation. Oh, it was just water to my soul. Then there was a couple of texts. So I cracked open the first text. It was Exodus 3:16, where God calls Moses to rescue his people from the tyranny of the Egyptians. And there God reminded me, like Moses, that he had given me a shepherd's staff, that God had made me a shepherd, that I'm a pastor at heart. Then I heard this promise. Now go. I'll be with you as you speak, and I will instruct you in what you need to say. Yeah! Another encouragement. The second text I read was Mark 6:47, where Jesus walks on the water speaking to his disciples, and these words were spoken, "Don't be afraid, take courage, I'm here." Man. St. Patrick's breastplate. I don't know if you're familiar with these words, but this was the closing statement in my devotional that day. It was this: Christ be with me, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ in the heart of everyone who thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone who speaks of me, Christ in every eye that sees me, Christ in every ear that hears me. I walked in there, man, standing straight upright under Christ, with that as my breastplate. That was my heart's cry, and I knew God was with me that morning. As I opened up the conversation, that's how I opened up the conversation. I shared my devotional. I shared what God had given me that morning. And he pauses and he says, I read the same statement this morning. I'm with you. And it just paved the way for open, free, honest dialogue for the next 2.5 hours. This action that I did this last Tuesday was me putting my faith into action. In light of James, he says that words without deeds is dead. This was my step of obedience in putting my faith into action. I wonder this morning, what does this look like in your own life as you've been wrestling with and grappling with? What does shalom look like for you? Are you experiencing shalom in your own heart? Because if we're not experiencing shalom here, if it doesn't begin internally, I can do all I want externally, but it needs to be first driven out of my heart. And from that place, we can begin to experience shalom in our relationships, right? How's shalom in your family? How's shalom in your marriage with your kids? You know, it's easy to listen to a sermon, even as I think about shalom, and this is now the third week that we've talked about shalom, and maybe some of you are going, get on with it already. Come on, let's move on through the text. We've done shalom. Isn't it so easy to say, okay, been there, done that, got it. But do we really understand it? We understand it intellectually, but are we living it? Do we know it in our experience? I'm reminded of what Maria Skeptsova once said. She was a 20th century nun remembered in Russia as Mother Maria. She says this, the meaning of the liturgy or the text must be translated into life. It must be translated into life. As I prepared to go see my fellow pastor, I gave a lot of thought to Plantinga's definition of sin. Sin is the culpable disturbance of shalom. As I pondered about this definition, again, I thought to myself, how have I contributed to the disturbance of shalom in the churches here in Squamish? How have I contributed to that? You see, it would have been very easy for me to walk into that meeting, pointing the finger, knowing full well the ways that this person has sinned against me, and I could have went in there and said, hey, this is where you have been wrong. How do you think a meeting like that would have gone? I needed to take ownership for my stuff, the things that I brought to the table concerning this disunity that has been particularly between two churches. So easy to point the finger. What do they say? If you point the finger, there's three pointing back at you, right? The definition of culpable is deserving blame. It's blameworthy, responsibility.